now, when unemployment is 3.5%, inflation is 8.5%, Fed funds is 2.5%, and you're worried about over tightening, this tells me that this is a very, very cowardly Fed. This is the Fed of Arthur Burns.
Blockworks is hosting its Digital Asset Summit in October. Over 800 institutions are attending, including FTX, UBS, Morgan Stanley, Coinbase, and the London Stock Exchange. To get a discount, use code GUIDANCE250, all caps, GUIDANCE250. This conversation with Joseph Wang and Mish Shedlock was conducted days before Fed Chair Jay Powell's speech at the Jackson Hole Summit. I just want you to know that that is the context, and that when Joseph Wang makes some remarks, which I perceive to be pretty explosive, he made that in the context of not having heard Fed Chair Jay Powell's speech, which was quite hawkish. Let's get into it. I am joined by Joseph Wang, Fed guy, as well as our special guest, Mish Shedlock, well-known economic blogger and investment advisor. Gentlemen, great to have you both here.
It's a pleasure to be on. And Joseph, I've been following you for a long time. Nice to meet you.
Thanks, Jack, and thanks, Mish. It's a pleasure to meet you. And thanks for posting so much great content.
Yeah, so Joseph, as viewers know, you are an expert in the plumbing of the financial system, having worked at the Fed for many years. Mish, your expertise, as well as in the investment business, is in the economic situation. So my first question, Mish, for you is, do you think we're in a recession already? And what data points could you point to support your case?
I thought we were in a recession in May, and I made that proclamation. We've had two quarters of negative GDP, but I don't think that's what matters. What matters, I think, is negative real final sales. Real final sales didn't really start to turn down until May. And in fact, a lot of things started happening in May. And, I said back then, I think we're in recession right now. But that was based off of my belief that housing was going to do what, in fact, it did do. But the April retail sales report was pretty hot. And I looked at that and said, whoa. And then in May, what happened? Retail sales plunged. Target came out and warned twice. Walmart warned. Target warned again last week about, the need to get rid of industry. The last retail sales report was another weak one. And housing has been miserable for about six months here now, with existing sales falling for 6 months. Today's housing report was an absolute disaster, down 29% from a year ago, but interestingly down 38.5% since January. Wow, when have you ever seen that outside of recession? And today we had the flash PMI report led by services. The PMI was 44, down from 47.5 last month. Interesting thing about that is the last ISM services was really hot. I looked at that and said, one of these reports is wrong. PMI, the market, well, now S&P, PMI came out again today. Services again leading the decline. I think the ISM numbers are wrong. Anyway, add it all up. You're looking at, other than jobs, everything looks recessionary to me.
Right. And Joseph, the Federal Reserve looks at many economic indicators. Of course, they look at real estate prices, new home sales, PMIs, yield curve inversions, all the things Mish just mentioned. But would it be correct to say, Joseph, that in terms of what affects the Fed's reaction functions, that's going to force the Fed to pivot, the main factor is the labor market? So the U.S. economy could be quite weak, but if the unemployment rate remains low, the Fed Reserve would be less likely to pivot to a more dovish stance. Would that be correct, Joseph?
I think that's part of it, but I think more broadly it's about inflation. So the Fed has a dual mandate, full employment, and price stability. And what they've been saying recently is that they're really worried about the price stability part. As you know, inflation is still about 8.5%. Core is still high and rising. So from their thinking, usually the way that you get inflation down is you increase a little bit of unemployment. So when you have more unemployment, you have more slack in the economy. So that means the economy slows down and prices go down as well. Another way you can think about it is that inflation goes down when people can no longer afford the higher prices. And one way people can afford higher prices is if they don't have jobs. And they've actually been kind of open about this too. If you listen to what Jay Powell said at his last press conference, he kind of beats around the bush. He's trying to say it in the nicest way possible, but he's saying that we need below trend economic growth for like 2 years. So he's telling you that he kind of wants a recession, you know, hopefully not a really bad one, but we kind of need one to get it. And he has trouble being straight. He's not like the Bank of England, straight up and tell you, this is going to be terrible, guys. Get
Don't
ready.
Ask for a raise, but, head of Bank of England. Don't ask for a raise.
To me, the Fed is, well, following sort of a wrong theory here. They're looking at the CPI, and actually they're looking more at the PCE. But, you know, that excludes housing. And that was the big mistake the Fed made, you know, in the years leading up to the Great Recession. It kept ignoring forever rising housing prices, and it ignored them again. So we're back in this housing bubble. You know, to me, and I understand why it's not in the CPI, is because the word is consumer. Okay, houses aren't a consumer expense, but my idea is, so what? You know, what matters? Does inflation matter or just consumer inflation matter? And this is where the Fed has made mistakes. I think the Fed is going to make another mistake, because I think we're going to start to see housing prices decline substantially. But guess what? That won't factor into the CPI. Rent will. Rent prices are still rising. I expect them to keep rising for a few more months. That's going to keep the Fed hot on the trigger of raising interest rates. And unless there's a credit event, which I really don't foresee, because the economic conditions are simply not as bad as they were in 2008, especially with all the free money interest rate, free money on interest on reserves that are going to the banks, that's going to help cushion them from any losses that they're going to have, say, in commercial real estate loans. So there's a chance here, a very good one, that, the Fed is actually for once going to go too far in the other direction. Any comment on that, Joseph?
I agree with you about housing. I mean, according to Zillow, my home price is down 15% in like 6 weeks. So, that's a pretty big drop. I think, though, that I think the housing bubble is this time is very much the Fed's fault. I mean, when you toggle interest rates have different sensitivities to different sectors of the economy. As we know, let's say financial markets are very sensitive to interest rates. In the real economy, some segments are, and that's the segment that's most sensitive is housing. And the Fed was buying mortgage-backed securities, keeping mortgage rates low, even when housing prices were up 20% a year. Mm-hmm. So, they were very much responsible this time, I think, for that housing bubble. It's very direct and obvious.
Responsible, or did they actively promote it? Did it just happen and they weren't paying attention, or was this by design?
So, I think just from my perspective, that gives them way too much credit, really. I really don't think they're intentionally do this. I don't get the sense that they know any better. And so they think that, buying mortgages is good because, we are helping people. So let's do that. And to up 20% a year, yeah, maybe that's a little bit above average, but oh well. The people at the Fed, they're well-intentioned, but I don't think they are very good at what they do. So now that the housing prices are reduced, that actually goes part of what they're trying to do. So one of the ways that they can get inflation down, like I mentioned before, is to make people unable to afford higher prices. And if your wealth is a bit lower, let's say you had a few hundred thousand dollars in home equity, and now maybe you have half of that, maybe you're going to spend less. You can't afford higher prices, and so that's helpful from their perspective in lowering inflation.
That is one way, but it's a slow slog, isn't it? Look at all the things that are totally inelastic. Rent, for example. You know, the Fed has this idea that inflation expectations matter. Yet there are actually two Fed studies done by the underlegs, which Powell and the key people on the Fed don't actually, they don't either read it or they don't believe it, because they've been trained to believe the wrong things. The rent and owner's equivalent rent are 31% of the CPI. And you tack on another 8% for energy, it's pretty much inelastic. I mean, you can turn the heat down a little bit, or you can, you know, maybe take a less vacation and spend less gas, but that's pretty much inelastic. Food is pretty much inelastic. You know, guess what? If your refrigerator goes out, what are you gonna do? You're gonna buy a new refrigerator. And you know, even if refrigerator prices are falling or expect them to rise, if you don't need a refrigerator, you're not gonna go out and buy one. So add it all up, and I, you know, came to, you know, you can add it up various ways, but I came to like 80% of the CPI is inelastic. There's, you know, very little demand. So, you know, trying to control prices by reducing demand or increasing unemployment, really isn't going to work, which is why I think the Fed is actually going to over tighten here.
So, Mish, are you suggesting that first that inflation is not yet peaked, and also that we're probably, because the Fed will overcompensate, that we'll go probably have a hard landing?
I think a hard landing is baked in the cake regardless. It depends on what your definition of hard is, because, again, I expect unemployment to be relatively strong, perhaps the strongest in any recession ever. It wouldn't surprise me at all. So, but in terms of demands for goods and services, in terms of inflation, the Fed is going to have a really tough time. And deglobalization is another factor. The Fed had winds of globalization at its back. You know, U.S. manufacturers were outsourcing to China, to Vietnam, to whatever. We're trying to onshore that. We're trying to bring that back. Guess what? That's going to raise the cost. That's going to raise the price of things. So winds that were blowing in the Fed's face are now blowing the other way. Productivity is another one. 22 million boomers are going to be retiring. So they're going to be replaced by who? By what? At what productivity? That's going to increase costs. Salaries, once they go up, tend not to come back down. So there's a lot of reasons to believe that we've seen the bottom in yields on interest rates. Also, the Fed is going to be very fearful of stepping on the QE gas again because of what just happened. So even if we get this big slump that I expect, I think the Fed's going to be reluctant to step on the gas like they did before. But, you know, I do think as long as employment stays high, you know, and the PCE, which is the Fed's preferred measure, you know, they're going to keep hiking.
I think you make a really good point about the of just employment will be strong. And like Misha, as you suggested that, you know, we have a lot of people retiring, right? So, and I've been thinking along these lines as well. When you have a lot of people retiring, you're basically decreasing the supply of labor. And mm-hmm. So that gives labor greater bargaining power. So maybe unemployment remains low and wage increases remain high. Mm-hmm. Now, all those people who retire, they're, let's say, living off of Social Security. Well, Social Security adjustments are based on CPI, right? So yeah. You have wages increasing at very high rates because of low unemployment. And the people who are retired, their Social Security payments are increasing by CPI as well. So you kind of have this, it's like a wage price spiral that you saw in the past. And, you know, you have other things happening. Biden is talking about giving everyone $10,000 off in their student loans. I'm sure more programs like that are in the pipeline. So you just have this basically stimulus price spiral.
Right. So Mish, you've made a lot of compelling points for structural inflation that are not sensitive to an increase in interest rates or a decrease in the bank reserves or stuff that the Fed actually has control over. But what about, so on the one hand, you see all these structural inflationary forces. in which case the Federal Reserve should be very active and very hawkish. But on the other hand, you see economic activity falling off a cliff, in which case the Fed, quote, should take its foot off the gas and start to be more dovish. So how do you see these two things falling out? Isn't this stagflationary scenario sort of contradictory? And yeah, Mish, and then I want to hear, Joseph, your view.
We're definitely in a stagflationary environment now. We've got, you know, deglobalization. We've got a Fed that's going to, you know, probably overtight. I think that's going to actually kill the stock market eventually. And with the stock market, you know, declining, that's going to reduce the demands, you know, for second homes, for more vacations, all of that stuff. It's going to take a while to filter in. Probably, you know, the best thing that could happen, for the Fed would be an out and out, you know, home price, you know, crash, where people would, you know, then step in and want to buy houses. But the longer that home prices, you know, stay afloat, the harder it is, you know, for the Fed to stimulate. And, you know, rent may be the key to all of this. There's a record number of homes under construction right now. Eventually, that supply is going to lower rents. That's what the Fed needs. But, you know, this might play out, what, 6-7 months from now before these homes are all constructed. Meanwhile, the Fed keeps tightening, but there's a lot of competing forces. Also, you know, boomers are going to retire. Right now, they feel pretty flush with cash from their stock market. That's going to support consumption for a while. But what if we get this big decline in the stock market that I expect? That's going to really weaken demand going forward. So I think at some point, this is going to reverse. And the Fed's going to cut, but it can't cut as much as before because of deglobalization, because of energy, because of decarbonization. So this all adds up to my long period of weak economic growth, even if it's not quite a recession.
Mish, when you look at what the Fed is telling you, they're not actually giving you a very aggressive rate hike path. They're saying that maybe they'll go to 3.25, maybe close to 4, and they'll stay there. It seems like they're trying to avoid just this over tightening you're talking about. They're trying to say, I want to be higher for longer. However, what they mean by high is just not really high. Let's say they raise to a level that's like 3.5%. Now, I mean, that's historically not really high, right? I mean, back mm-hmm. when we really had inflation at 8%, 9%, you know, Fed funds rate was, 10%. So 3.5%, it's really low. And so I think what they're trying to do is just kind of keep it at this moderately low level and for a long period. And hopefully, I guess, just kind of maybe accept a slower pace of inflation reduction, but also not to over-tighten too much. Do you think that will work?
I think that is probably going to work in a lot of ways. But what are the implications for that on the stock market? What is the implications? What are stocks priced for now, Joseph, Brad? What are they priced for here? I think they're priced for actually for some sort of Goldilocks recovery. You know, that's not going to happen. And you see, you know, Fannie Mae came out today and I was kind of astonished by this. I think home prices are going to rise next year.
No way. And
I said, really? Okay. I said, let's assume that they're right. What is that going to do for home sales? What is that going to do then for the demand for appliances? What is that going to do for, you know, existing home sales? Again, the demand for appliances, lawnmowers, paint, furniture, cabinetry, all the things people do when they buy a home. The longer home prices stay elevated, the slower and weaker this recovery is going to be. So the Fed might engineer this after this recession, which we're in, but we're going to flirt in and out of recession, perhaps for 2 years because of all these imbalances that have built up And because of the constraints on the Fed due to deglobalization and fear of another interest rate spiral, which they're not going to want to do.
I want to turn the conversation to the stock market. Joseph, when you and I first filmed our interview, it aired in late December, early January, and it was perfect timing. Your view was the Federal Reserve is essentially coming for risk assets. There has to be a reverse wealth effect, so people feel less wealthy, so they spend less money in order to combat inflation. And you predicted that stocks and bonds would fall alongside each other, which very rarely happens. That has pretty much is exactly what has happened over the past 6 months. But there was a from January to June, that's exactly what happened, mid-June, June 14th, June 15th. But then over the past 2 months, Joseph, risk assets have resurged. Apple's up something like 25% in 2 months. And, you know, if I was at the Fed and I had the goal of wanting to contain or reduce inflation, curb inflation via the reverse wealth effect, I would have been very happy with the first 6 months of risk assets falling, but I would be quite irritated by the S&P 500 rallying over the past 2 months. How do you think the Federal Reserve views the upsurge in risk assets we've had since June, mid-June?
So the Fed wants to tighten financial conditions. That's how they think monetary policy works. And tightening financial conditions is code name basically for lower equity prices. So I don't think they like what they see here. Now, usually, and I think many people in the market expect that, let's say, Powell will, at Jackson Hole, be reasonably hawkish and try to enforce his view on the markets that he wants to stay higher for longer. I think over the past few weeks, you've had some Fed presidents come out and basically echo that message. Now, if that happens, I mean, we obviously have another leg down in risk assets and we have not seen the bottom yet. That's one possibility. Now, the other possibility, and I think this is something what the rates market is suggesting, is that Powell is going to chicken out. Powell is a pivoter. So come next year, he's going to start thinking about cutting rates, and maybe he'll cut a little bit. Now, in that case, maybe risk assets, I think, will still decline a bit, but maybe, you know, it's not like a crash. Maybe eventually we will stabilize, and sometime next year, maybe it will start going higher. So I think that's kind of the two narratives in the market right now. Now, I was strongly leaning towards the former, and as I've talked about this many times, like I was in the camp of, let's say, Bill Dudley, who mentioned that if stock markets keep going higher, Powell is just going to hike more aggressively because he needs to get stock market lower, financial conditions tighter to achieve his goal. I'm not actually so sure about that anymore. I've kind of pivoted myself. And that has to do with what I read in the most recent minutes. There's this line in the minutes where many people at the Fed were worried that we might over-tighten. Now, when unemployment is 3.5%, inflation is 8.5%, Fed funds is 2.5%, and you're worried about over-tightening, this tells me that this is a very, very cowardly Fed. This is the Fed of Arthur Burns. Now, if that's true, I don't know. I don't know if he'll go through with a hawkish path. I think he'll try, but I think ultimately he'll cave simply because that's just kind of the politics and the culture of the moment. And you guys, we had Volcker, but before Volcker, we had Burns. They were both good men, just men of their times. And I don't know if we're ready for an aggressive tightening.
Interest rate futures market has not, you know, it's been pricing in a Fed pivot for a while at February, but it has not, you've not seen the fall in short-term rates one would expect given the rally we've had over the past two months in the S&P 500. You know, the 2 year is back above 3.2%. It's not like the rates are falling. So Joseph, so you know, it is quite newsworthy that you said this. You know, a lot of people, including myself, obviously, put a lot of regard for what you say and your view. So the fact that there's a Joseph Wang pivot that you've pivoted to now thinking that Powell's going to pivot because he's a pivoter, that is extremely meaningful to me. Given that you've had the opposite view for the the past 8 months and you've been extremely right in that. Now that you've pivoted, Joseph, when do you see the Powell pivot and what is the realized terminal rate going to be? How long before Powell starts cutting again? You know.
I think he's going to try to carry out the plan. I just don't think that he has the resolve to do so. So, you know, like what we've been talking about, higher for longer, I think he's going to try his best to get there. I just think that if we have just some kind of hiccup along the way, like let's say we do enter into a recession and it's moderate, and you know, as Mitch noted, we have a lot of signs that that's kind of unfolding. I don't think he'll be able to hold higher for longer. It's probably going to be higher for not very much longer. I think the futures market is probably not wrong. I think it's not unreasonable to think that Powell would be something. And it's not about where the economy is. I think, from my judgment, it's more about just who sits on the FOMC and what their beliefs are, and just how strong they are, and how they make this trade-off between unemployment and inflation. And I get the sense that they're very sensitive to unemployment, that, you know, maybe even increasing unemployment by a little bit is just not worth it to them. So, you know, we'll learn a lot more about this as we have more coming meetings. But I don't think the futures market is as wrong as I used to think it was.
We're discussing the euro dollar curve that's implying, you know, cuts next year. Whereas, you know, the Fed is like, well, we're going to hold here, hold here, hold here. And then, you know, even if those cuts come, what does it really mean? What is it's going to mean that the economy is a lot weaker than the Fed expected. And, you know, but I think the bottom in interest rates is in. You know, I was a, you know, big deflationist for many years. And granted that there's some deflationary forces still out there. Retirement has two sides, but the deglobalization and decarbonization was the kicker for me. It's going to be hard there. So, you know, if the Fed can't get interest rates back down to where they were, and that's what it took to create this bubble, you know, I think there's going to be this euphoria, maybe temporary, while the, Fed finally does this pivot, as you call it. But I don't think we're back to the races. I don't think the Fed's going to launch this massive QE, maybe a cut here or a cut there. Is that really going to be enough to support the stock market based off of what's priced in? My answer is no.
I agree with you, Mish. I think the lows for, let's say, the 10-year are in. I think 10-year inflation is going to go higher, and 10-year is going to go higher. And I think one of the side effects of having a Fed that's not willing to take pain to get rid of inflation is that inflation will be structurally higher, not just for all the good factors that you mentioned earlier, but also because policy is probably not going to be determined enough to put it into high inflation. So let's say we have structural inflation that's 3-4%, maybe 5% higher, then naturally that means that the 10-year will probably be higher as well. So nominal interest rates would be higher as well. So no, I agree with you there. And if that's the case, then you have to imagine that the stock market will not be doing very well, right? So if we have interest rates that are going higher, let's say the 10-year is at 4%, It would make sense for the stock valuations if you look at it that way.
So even if it's at 2.5%, let's say, with the Fed not doing QE, that's quite a bit different of an environment here in terms of, you know, of profit, in terms of zombies, which I expect a lot of them to go bust this cycle. With housing not picking back up, that's not going to be good for durable goods. It's just going to be, I keep coming back to the same thing, a period of long weakness that can't be good for the stock market. It's just not a very good picture. And all it is, really, right. We're just discussing payback for three consecutive bubbles. You know, we had the dot-com bubble. It was coupled with bad loans to South America, Argentina, all those places. You know, we blew a housing bubble to fix that. Then we blew a dot-com, and we blew an everything bubble to fix the aftermath of the Great Recession. But one thing is different here. The stress on banks this recession is nowhere near as big as it was during the Great Recession. We had all the liar loans, people walking away from loans. Banks were hit extremely hard during that. They're not going to get hit as hard this recession, especially with the Fed paying all this interest on now any reserves, not just excess reserves. And it's reserves that the Fed crammed down their throat, and they're not going to unwind all of it. So all of that is going to be able to support a condition where the Fed can keep interest rates a little bit higher and not panic like it did the last two times.
Yeah, Joseph, the banks, essentially the commercial banks, they are, you know, they are in the hospital of that is owned by the Fed, and they are just have the IVs. They have all the nutritions they need, right? Would you say that's accurate? Because like JP Morgan, they have so many reserves on their balance sheet that they're only offering us 1 basis point for depositors, even though the 2-year treasury is at or let's say, you know, the 3-month treasury is close to 3%. Joseph, I also want your views, Joseph, on why, let's wind back the clock to the Powell pivot of December 2018, January 2019. It was the actual pivot itself was this, not the cutting rates, but the halt in the increase in rates, correct? And also, at what point did quantitative tightening actually stop? And also, wasn't it the repo in the summer of 2019 that crashed that caused this not QE, QE of repo facility? And now we have the facilities. So I know I threw a lot at you, Joseph, but if we were to have a pivot, what would that look like? You know, because people say, oh, the QE is coming again. And it's just like, you know, obviously it's possible, but you know, I would be shocked if balance sheet is growing in December of this year. I mean, I would be shocked. You know, it would just be, that's just not going to happen.
So I think one of the things that to keep in mind is that the authorities, they have a lot of levers they can to try to tamp inflation down. And one of the levers that they act on is through the banking sector. So what they could do, for example, is that they could raise the regulatory costs for banks to create credit, something called the countercyclical buffer. And when they raise that, that makes it more expensive for banks to make loans. That reduces credit creation and could slow down the economy and thus lower inflation. So when you're thinking about the Fed, the toolkit is not just interest rates and balance sheets, but they have this regulatory side too. And as I understand, they're thinking about using it. So there's a lot of things they can do that just don't have to be just standard monetary policy tools. If the Fed wanted to slow things down, let's say if the Fed wanted to pivot, I mean, there's a lot of different ways they can do that. It doesn't have to necessarily be straight up rate cuts. Maybe they're higher for longer, just doesn't get very high to begin with. Maybe they get to 3% and they just hold it for a while, hoping that inflation will tamp down. Now, Jack, I agree with you. It's very unlikely that they would start expanding the balance sheet. Now, for the Fed, and this is almost religious thinking on their part, is that, you know, when the balance sheet and the rate cuts have to be in the same direction, and usually you expand the balance sheets after you exhaust the rate cuts. So if you wanted to see the balance sheet expand again, what you would first expect is for rates to go to zero and then the Fed to do balance sheets. That's just kind of the sequence there. And since I don't think any of us expect the rates to be cut to zero anytime soon, then you probably shouldn't expect to see QE rolled out either. If there's some trouble in the treasury markets, there are other tools that can do that. As we've talked about before, the U.S. Treasury is thinking about doing buybacks, and they could easily handle any problems in the treasury market without the Fed stepping in and just going back to QE again. So that's kind of a good thing, too, since you can separate monetary policy from just basic market functioning.
I'm looking at mortgages, and with the collapse in existing home sales for the last 6 months, is the Fed really going to be able to get in the amount of mortgage-backed security reduction that you know it's allegedly penciled in? Is that going to happen? I'm saying no.
That's definitely not going to happen. So just for context, so the Fed wants to have a maximum roll off of $35 billion a month in its mortgage securities. And that's just not going to happen because when you calculate the principal pay downs, it's about $25 billion a month. So they're going to be about $10 billion short every month going forward. The only way they could make that up is basically by selling mortgages outright. And we haven't heard them talk about that for some time. I don't know if they'll do it. We were speaking with Chris Ruelin last week, and he didn't feel like it was a good idea to do. Wouldn't be easy to do. So,
yeah, Chris definitely he thinks it's going to be very hard to do. Joseph, wasn't there some edition of the Fed minutes where they said sale of MBS might be appropriate?
Yeah, they mentioned it a while back. Just haven't heard them talk about it for a while. I want to ask Mish something. So Mish, you know, we've been talking about rates are going higher and stock market is not going to do well. What segments of the market do you think will do well? I mean, let's say we have someone with a bunch of cash, and you know, stock market's going to go down, rates, bond market's going to sell off. What do you think are the areas that are good these days?
You know, I'm not. I've always been a believer that cash is not trash. There's an opportunity cost, and I think, you know, waiting, appearing, you know, high-end cash here. I think after this pullback, energy prices, energy might be, you know, an okay sector. The healthcare with all the boomers retiring, I think healthcare, you know, might be pretty strong. I'm in some private placements that I can't talk about in the healthcare industry that I think are going to do phenomenally well, but you're going to really have to pick your spots here. Gold has certainly underperformed what I would have expected to do. Typically, in the initial stages of recession, gold gets hit pretty hard, but the miners got hit a lot harder than what I thought they would do. And I think that's just now belief that, you know, like I said, there's a divergence here between what the stock market thinks the Fed is going to do and what's implied by the price of gold here and how gold miners are acting. Gold certainly surprised me to the downside here.
Me as well, actually. I was thinking gold would do well, but you know, even though inflation was high, it didn't seem to respond. It seems to respond much more strongly to dollar strength. So when the dollar went up, the gold went down. That's just kind of traded like a currency, basically, against the dollar.
That's not it. Yeah, what gold, if you pull up a chart, and I've posted this chart before, gold is really reacts in terms of, you know, does the Fed have things under control or not? If you pull up a chart, that's how it acts. I mean, gold fell from, you know, 850 to 250 between 1980 and 2000 with inflation every step of the way. But guess what? There was a lot of faith in the Greenspan Fed. He was called the Great Maestro, right? You know, this guy could do no wrong. Now, then when the housing bubble started brewing, okay, gold, you know, shot up. In the initial stages of the Great Recession, it went down, but it went right back up, you know, with QE. Gold peaked, a temporary peak. It since then exceeded that when the Eurozone was, you know, arguably about to bust up. Mario Draghi came out with his famous speech, "We will do whatever it takes to save the euro, and believe me, it will be enough." And the amazing thing about that speech is the ECB did nothing. All he did was make that speech, but gold peaked right about that time, fell, you know, back from 1750 to, you know, 2000. Gold started, you know, rising again, you know, made, you know, new highs when it looked like inflation was going to get out of control. And the Fed, you know, belief then was the Fed was going to pivot. Gold started going back down when it realized, you know, hey, guess what? The Fed might not pivot. That's the way you need to think about gold, because if you just look at the U.S. dollar index, gold at the U.S. dollar index, right where it's been, has been at 300, 800, 1200, 1700. So it's not really the dollar. It's what the faith in central banks, primarily the Fed, is going to do. And gold is picking up on that. You know, gold seems to believe, you know, the Fed is going to carry this through. And if gold starts shooting back up and stays starts shooting back up, that's going to be the message that, hey, gold thinks the Fed's going to pivot.
If the Fed pivots, then that I guess that would mean that they won't be able to control inflation. They're going to give in. And so is that's when gold will probably, you think that's when gold will start soaring, because that it's thinking that the Fed won't tighten enough to kill inflation. So we'll kind of be living in inflationary times.
It's more of a semi-stagflationary time. You know, gold did very well in the 70s and 80s in the stagflation period. It's now acting as if the Fed is actually going to bring inflation under control. So yes, in that sense, or if the sense that, you know, the Fed does not hike as much as implied here now that the Fed has penciled in, that gold somehow seems to believe, even though the euro dollar curve doesn't. Now, that's the amusing thing here about the way that gold is acting. So I'd say one of those beliefs is wrong. You know, the euro dollar curve or gold, which one is it? But it's going to be tough with valuations where they are. Whether they use the Shiller 10-year smooth PE or the Warren Buffett indicator, you know, by any measure, you know, the stock market is overvalued. I think gold is way undervalued here. I certainly wish I sold it at the top. I didn't. I actually did sell some then, but not enough. We'll see. I think it's just going to be a really hard environment for stocks. And the interesting thing, which we've not discussed yet, is what that means here for pension plans. You know, Illinois pension plans are essentially insolvent, and it won't even take a huge decline in the stock market to get there. You know, when they're expecting, you know, 8% growth year after year after year, if we just get 2% rises in the stock market for the next 5 years, which would be about the best I could absolutely see on average, pension plans are in a world of hurt.
Mitch, to your point about pension funds, you know, that's a really good point. I remember like a few years ago, everyone was talking about pension funds being insolvent. And then we had this ginormous rally post COVID and everyone's like, yeah, or pension problems are solved. And now that everything is kind of falling apart, those problems are creeping back up again.
Well, the interesting thing about Illinois is despite this massive increase, it's in worse shape than it was 3 years ago, because they didn't put any new funds in, and with all the people, you know, retiring and the increased automatic increases in, you know, some of these pension benefits that the Illinois legislature mandated and built in there, this massive rally did not help Illinois at all. So, you know, what are they going to do in a genuine downturn?
I know what they're going to do. I'll tell you, the Fed is going to fund it. We already saw this happen during COVID. The Fed had this emergency facility. They lent money to the Illinois government. They lent money to in New York City as well. So, you know, one day when we have the next crisis, when many, many of our good citizens are retired and unable to afford anything, well, you know, the government is going to call the Fed and they're going to bail them out. I think
well,
that's the
lending
future.
Doesn't work, Joseph. Lending doesn't. A loan is a loan. And you know, the Fed is not able to gift money. You know, loaning money to the, you know, that's money that has to be paid back.
Yes, but what if it's a loan that you can renew forever? Yeah.
What about PPP?
Let's say you lend money to Illinois $1 billion. It's time to repay. I'll lend it back to you again. And we just keep going forever. That's basically what QE is anyway, right? So just going to lend you money and you can let you roll over the loan forever.
Well, if you want a scenario under which gold does really well, you just named it.
No, I think that gold is going to be good in the future. Yeah. Maybe it's probably just not time yet, but the way things are going, it's a hard asset that can't be printed. So that says a lot.
We'll see. Yeah. Gentlemen, as we reach a close, I want to ask you, later this week, the Jay Powell will be speaking at Jackson Hole. What, if any, developments do you think we're going to see? Joseph, I want to ask you first. You said earlier you think it's going to be a hawkish meeting. What would that mean? What would Powell or any of the other Fed people impart to the market that would be perceived as hawkish?
I think what Powell would do was he was just trying to emphasize his higher for longer. So what that means is trying to get the market to believe that he's going to hike to, let's say, 3.5% and hold it there for all of next year and maybe beyond. I think that's his mission, to get the market to believe that. And that's what he will try before he gives up. But we're too early yet. He's not going to give up yet.
My answer would be the same, but I'll add one more thought here. Typically, the ECB is there. Is Christine Lagarde going to be there this year? You know, it'd be interesting to see what the ECB's comments here are, because we have this huge, not as big as when Mario Draghi made his famous speech, but the yield spreads between, Germany, Italy, and Greece and Spain are really widening here. And, a speech is, we'll do whatever it takes, ain't going to cut it this time. So the ECB is actually, secretly bailing out Italy, maybe along the lines of what Joseph said, thinks is going to happen here with pension funds. But that's what's going on in Europe right now. It's also leading, one of the things leading to the strength of the U.S. dollar. So, it'll be, interesting to see, what the ECB does going forward, Europe is in a much worse position here because of energy than the United States. So it's really going to be interesting to see what the ECB does, and what they do also means, strength or weakness in the U.S. dollar index, because that's what 62% or something of the U.S. dollar index, the euro. So, there's a lot going on. But if I can just finish up with one point, Germany is clearly in recession right now. Europe is probably all of Europe is in recession. China is very weak because of the imploding property bubble there, and because of its, COVID lockdown policy. For the United States to buck that trend, there was this widespread belief in 2008 that China was going to diverge from the world economy. Now everyone seems to believe the U.S. is going to diverge from the world economy. Well, that thought was wrong in 2008. That thought's wrong now. We're headed for a global recession.
Thank you, Mish. It's been great having you here. People can find you on Twitter at MishGEA, and they can find your writings at mishtalks.com. Joseph, thank you as well. Of course, people can find you at FedGuy12, and your writings can be found at FedGuy.com. And I really do recommend people check out your most recent frequently asked questions about the Fed. I learned a lot just about the Fed's balance sheet, as well as the net interest income and sort of what happens if the Fed, quote, loses money. So guys, thanks so much.
There is something that you need to be doing right now, and that is reading the Blockworks Daily newsletter. For top market insights and the latest in crypto news, you have to subscribe to the Blockworks Daily newsletter, and you can do so by clicking on the link in the description to this video or by visiting blockworks.co/newsletter.